A lot of people think base phase is so boring. It's a lot of aerobic work and not so exciting, but that's where the magic happens.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. Today on the Athlete's Compass, we are diving into the science and practice of periodization, how structuring your training in phases can help you build fitness, avoid burnout, and perform at your best on race day. We'll discuss what periodization really means, how everyday athletes can use it in their busy lives, and why it's one of the best tools for long-term health, fitness, and performance. So, what exactly is periodization, and why should everyday athletes care about it?
Well, why don't I start out, MJ? I would say periodization is ultimately, you know, it's like a concrete duration of or period of training, where it's like a, you know, the type of training that you're doing is quite kind of clear, right? And one example would be, you know, putting a base period of training in, where mostly within the base period training, you're completing mostly low intensity exercise training, and, you know, as much as you can probably tolerate within your own level of ability. And by doing that, you know, we just saw an incredible feat this last weekend here, where the three top athletes were Norwegian athletes, right, at the Ironman World Championships. And it just everyone has heard about the Norwegian method, but the general gist of the Norwegian method is ultimately years upon years of aerobic endurance-based training before you layer, you know, threshold and high intensity training on top of that. And when you do that, we know that you develop this layer of optimal fat oxidation, right? The more fat can take a role in the training process, the better, you know, the easier it is, because it's just such a clean fuel for burning. The byproducts ultimately of low intensity aerobic fat burning are just carbon dioxide and water. So it's just this clean fuel. So these individuals, these three guys that just destroyed it, and what an incredible race it was. They've periodized and developed this huge base period of training. Now, in the book I'm writing with Tim Noakes, legendary Tim Noakes, The Lore of Running, the fifth one, he talks a lot in the fourth edition, where coaches, experienced coaches in the running world, really experienced this. They didn't really know what it was, but they called it adaptation energy. We've talked about this before within other areas, but yeah, by performing this aerobic based training, it almost like it's giving you this energy where when you take the next layer of training on top of it, maybe like we'll call it a build phase, if you've seen that in Athletica, now all of a sudden you are able to really adapt to that. And I believe it was Ingvild Odden, and it was the podcast that I did with her on the great study she did in Norway. She took these well-trained endurance cyclists, and she noted that only the cyclists that had a layer of low-intensity training, like higher volume training below it, were they actually able to adapt. The ones that didn't have that in their background, and there was a significant difference between these two groups, they didn't adapt to the high intensity interval training. So in one group, the one that did the base training, ultimately they had this, they had the adaptive energy, that aerobic training in the background. So yeah, I think it's basically taking these different periods of exercise training, being very specific with it and strategic with it, and then layering on your training on top of that.
I would add also that it's just like a roadmap for your training journey. Like without some kind of plan, you're just, you know, randomly doing things. And granted, you can get to a certain level of fitness just randomly training and doing whatever. But when you start organizing your training into certain periods, like Paul was mentioning, the macro, a larger or longer term organization of your training, but then you can look at it periodization also within the week, right? So like a micro periodization. But basically it takes a little bit of planning that we do for you if you're using Athletica to periodize your training.
Yeah, but you can also take some ownership with it too, right? I think that's kind of the cool thing about Athletica. Sometimes, you know, we give you an idea, but we don't know everyone. And it's like MJ says, it's a roadmap, but you can deviate a little bit on that roadmap yourself. And one of the cool features in Athletica is if actually you go into the overview roadmap on your on that page in Athletica, you can actually swap out a build week with a base week. So if you want to prolong your base week out and you think that, you know, that's a little bit too soon to be adding those build weeks, then you can, you know, you have that right. And I would just encourage you to trust that little man or little woman within you to do that or talk to your coach, either or. But it's very handy. I often use that feature. I'm not quite ready for my build phase. I know I've got that event at a certain time, but I'm okay. I just want to put it on one more, you know, one or two more weeks of base training, because I know that's going to really lead to that adaptation energy that I was talking about before. So that's quite a nice little feature.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I've noticed in myself that the standard long distance triathlon build phase is very long for me. And I just start to feel a little too fatigued for my own liking mm-hmm. at the end of it.
Yep.
So I rather have it a little bit longer base and then build.
Let's take a quick step back. And what are those main phases of the periodized training plan, you know, and what should athletes expect in each?
Sure. So basically in Athletica, you've got a test week. It's week one, ultimately. Unless you've clicked, don't give me a test week. You're gonna test in week one just to make sure that we've got the training zones set and the threshold set. And then after that, you move into the base week. And it really always depends on how far out we are from the race date. The longer, the better, ultimately. So if you're a year out from your training event, that's a great time, and you're going to be doing those base weeks for a long time. But then once we get a little bit closer, say within 2 months or so, you're going to start to get some build weeks, and we're going to start to really prepare for the specifics of that event. And then when those build weeks come in, they're going to have a lot more of the key sets and the pieces of the race that you're about to do. And the intensity of the sessions will be higher in the week. So that's the build weeks. And then finally, Paul, the taper weeks come at the end. So generally a 2 week taper. And in this phase, there's going to be a progressive tapering of the training volume in those weeks, generally 25 and then another 25% after that. So you're only doing 50% in the last week before you perform. And there's recovery weeks in there as well. Also, you know, you'll build, recover, build, recover, build, recover. So those are the general formulations of the periodization that's within Athletica.
And I think there are different names too for, like, depending where you are. Like, for example, in Norway, we would call base weeks for general
preparation.
Preparation, and then build would be specific preparation, and then comes race season. What we don't have is a season break, which I think everybody should have.
Yeah, I agree.
So many people don't take any breaks, I've realized. Yeah. And I think it's very, very important.
It is. Yes. Highly recommend. I think we've talked about it before, but yeah, a season break, 3 weeks is a great one. Or just nothing. Like, there's no training is in the plan, and you're just mentally you're off, and you're doing whatever you want, and it's until you start getting motivated again and to come back. And then you're hungry to train. When you're hungry to train again, then that's time to kind of come back. But yeah, without that, you really risk the mental fatigue that you don't want when you later on in the year, when you're starting to move back towards the build phases, right? That's when you want to be mm-hmm. on and have that energy.
You don't want to stand in a start line feeling meh.
No, you do not.
We asked our forum for some questions about periodization, and Giuseppe85 asks this: I'd be curious to know the differences, pros and cons of a periodization program like Athletica, where there's a mix of stimuli, VO2 max, strength, and aerobic endurance is used in a week, rather than a block periodization where aerobics, then strength, VO2, and race pace are stimulated individually. So let's take a step back and explain what those two things mean, and then talk about how Athletica does periodization.
I have to say, I don't totally understand the question, because there's a lot of similarities in even what Giuseppe's written there. But with respect, and if we look at classic block periodization versus traditional periodization is what I've just mentioned, where it's long period of base, build, perform. Block periodization is when you're doing multiple races and over a shorter timeline, say it's you're doing a race every 2 months or 1 month, say, for example, and you're doing these micro blocks where it's like, you've finished the last race, a little bit of base again, base or recovery, build, perform. That's ultimately the difference. Athletica conforms to both, in fact. So if you had multiple races in there, you're just going to continue to get these build weeks in there more frequently. And then, there's a little bit of a risk that comes with that. But, I'm pretty familiar with doing these with the New Zealand Tri program that we were in, because it's when you're on the Olympic circuit and doing all the World Cups, you have to program using a block periodization method, because the races are just always happening, and that's how you accumulate your points in the series, and that's what the federation expects. So both methods work. I think if we're going to go back to the Norwegian success over just last weekend, that was probably you were looking at performances that were generally classic periodization, long periods of base over to a big build and a performance. So I think those tend to work a bit better, but it really almost depends on the context of the individual. I know, like Alistair Brownlee, Athletica partner, he would always perform block periodization, but that's because he had to when he was on the ITU circuit. So and Athletica caters for both. So I think that covers it. For me, the pros and cons. MJ,
I think he might be referring to, I can't remember where it's coming from, but block periodization. For example, they would use for 6 weeks of time developing, for example, FTP or VO2 max, like focusing on one adaptation at a time, while other aspects of fitness, for example, speed would take a little bit of a less dominant role. So you would be focusing on VO2 max sessions really more in that period, while the other aspects, like we work on strength endurance, we have VO2 max, we are like hitting those adaptations every week, right, over a longer time. There's a little bit of a more of a focus towards the race specific stuff on the build weeks. But I think he's referring to like, if you work on your VO2 max for 6 weeks, you have to put something else being a little bit less focused. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Athletica generally takes the philosophy to hit all the different nails at the various different times, right?
Yeah.
So you still get your VO2 hit, you still get your strength endurance hit, and you get your race pace hit, at least in a build phase. And then, I guess probably the key thing that's less is in the base phase is that there's no race pace, because you're not preparing for a race at that point in the game. And that is the key difference between the two blocks, right? But
yeah,
strength endurance is always a good thing to develop. VO2 is always a good target to just hit, you know, even if it's a short stim like we're doing right now with MJ on the velocity sessions. So I don't know. That's
I think he's asking like, when would you use block periodization, like focusing on, for example, FTP increases. And I think for most people, most athletes, regularly hitting those systems is better than hitting VO2 max for example, 2 months and then not developing mm-hmm. it. But where, like, if you're, and I know Giuseppe is incredibly fit, if you know that you have a weakness, you could insert a block of focusing more on, for example, your durability or your VO2 max, if you know that you would benefit from higher VO2 max, or if you're like me, a flatlander, you would want to, like, if you know you're going to go to Nice or somewhere with a lot of elevation, that you would want to focus on strength endurance, right? But for most athletes, I think the way we keep hitting VO2 max like year round, I've seen incredible improvements in my performances just because I've been doing VO2 max regularly instead of just focusing on a short period of time. I think for most people, it works really well.
Yeah. Your power output is making me jealous these days, MJ.
Me too.
My ego's taking a hit.
Well, we're gonna show up every week.
Yeah. Congrats on that, MJ. It's definitely working for you.
Yeah. But yeah, so like Giuseppe, if you know you have a weakness, there's, you know, maybe there's a point of doing a block of whatever that weakness is, and then get back on the track.
J.H. Buchholz also asks on the forum, I'm very curious about the direction Athletica is going in regards to the off-season period. I'd like to focus on full body strength and mobility, and I'd like to know how Athletica will support strength and mobility in the off-season.
I think, that isn't a key focus just today on the platform, but maybe next year that could be a really good thing to start looking at. But we do have a lot of the tools for you to use in terms of like the HYROX plan, say, for example. So if you want a break, a mental break, as we kind of spoke about, it could be a great option to, try out some of MJ's, strength sessions in Athletica. And in the HYROX version. So that's on your global library. Do a search for HYROX and you'll see about, 60 or 70 of these various different strength sessions that are in there, and pick one that looks manageable and then work on doing that consistently through your weeks. So that you develop that. And you definitely have both, you have the full body strength that in there for sure. So what do you think, MJ?
Yeah, there's mobility session there too, which is also on velocity. And if you want to do mobility with me, we do those on Friday mornings. So you're welcome to join. But yeah, I mean, mobility and strength should be year round, not just like that off season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially as you age too, right? So if you're old like me, your day begins with mobility. So basically it's... every single morning I walk down here and I do, just as my coffee warms up upstairs, I'm doing 15 minutes of mobility on all the little various devices and stuff whilst the coffee kind of warms up. But it's a great routine and habit. Mm-hmm. And, all my aches and pains of the various years of, various training, a lot less when I do that. If I don't do my 15 minutes every morning, then I know about it. Yeah. And that's just a lot of yoga poses ultimately at the end of the day, from, child's pose to all the various different, warrior poses to, cat cows and, and knees over toes type movements as well. Those that's kind of the gist. If I do that, feeling really good.
Jack, you have to check out Lawrence Van Lingen's spinal, what is it called? Spinal
Awesomizer.
Awesomizer is good, but he's got really good YouTube channel. Go and dig around there. There's a really good, like a spinal wave. I want to say it's spinal wave.
Yeah.
Or spinal flow. It's really amazing for your back. Yeah.
We got to get Lawrence on the podcast for sure. Yes. He's just a legend. He's helped so many of our top athletes.
So how long should each of these training phases last for most endurance athletes, and how flexible can those timelines be, and how do we know when we should transition to another phase?
Ooh, how long is a piece of string? That's a tough one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I think so much is that unfortunately depends, but you can imagine if you're a, like those three guys that won, you know, they're coming off this, you know, growing up base phase ultimately, right? And they've been on base phase for so long, and they can have much longer build phases out. They respond really well to that. Conversely, if they're your beginner and you're just starting in, you should really try to probably prolong your base phase and train to train first a little bit and just work on developing those things before going into the, Steven Seiler puts it, the no pain, no gain kind of hard build phase training, which everyone's always so hungry to get to, but you'd be definitely, in my opinion, more, better to kind of prolong the base phase. So start early and really try to get a good lot of adaptation energy ready to go in before you hit 2 months or so out there. When you're 2 months out and you've already got a good base phase under you, it's time to get going. It's like, it's really time to prepare for this, right? And that's when you're doing build phases and you're doing pieces of the race. You'll see it on there, right? That's when, like, a lot of your race is going to be in zone 3A or zone 3B. That tends to be like if it's a prolonged endurance event. So you need to do specific work that is going to be like that. So principle specificity, you feel better doing those. And that's what raises the FTP and all those various things. So I don't know. What do you think? What did I miss on that, MJ?
I think you nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think base phase is so boring. It's a lot of aerobic work and not so exciting, but that's where the magic happens, really. Like, the longer I've done this, like, the more I like the base phase, because it, like, you can really get some work done and not feel so tanked. And it just becomes part of your lifestyle, really, the base phase. Yeah. And then if you do the VO2 max sessions, so like, for us, VO2 max sessions are still there during base phase, and I cannot believe how much I've improved. Just keep the VO2 max sessions going year round. It's crazy, and those help on especially hilly courses. It just makes you climb up those hills so much faster and recover faster because you've done those VO2 max sessions.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you make, is that even in our base phases, it doesn't mean that you're not hitting the VO2 target. You might just be hitting it a little bit less, but it's like you're still tapping that nail during the week so that you've got that. And, we've talked about the physiology that's important on that, fast twitch muscle fiber recruitments, respiratory muscle engagement, and then, cardiac muscle engagement too, left ventricle contraction, right? So it's not crazy amounts, but it's just like, oh, don't forget about that, right? And it's, but lo and behold, those are layered on week. And, like you're saying, MJ, you're even adapting on those, and the numbers are looking pretty good, and they're feeling easier and easier the longer we go through them.
One of the challenges that a lot of people had, and I'm including myself in this, because I had some spring races that I wanted to train for, is that the periodized plan had me do, 4 or 5 hour rides in the wintertime. So how can someone with a busy life and limited training time realistically apply periodization to their training given some of their constraints?
Well, I reflect on, you know, the Luke Evans podcast, because he's dealing with the same thing. He's a busy engineer, but he's still sort of, he's like, you know what? I can't do 6 hours, but I can do four. And he does 4 hours on his trainer. That works for him. So it's whatever you are, what works for you. If, you know, is 3 hours the most you can do, 2 hours the most you can do, then that's great. Then do that in the winter. You have the power to tweak and cater that to what you can sort of do. Also, the other thing I do sometimes, because I've got lots of meetings all over the day, but I still like to get my overall volume done, is I might do an hour and a half in one session in the morning or mid morning, and then have some meetings, and then I'll come back and I might get another recovery ride in. So, you know, I build that out to another hour, hour and a half, easy kind of later. And that's a good way that I can, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to do 3, 4, 5 hours in a row. You can break that up in across meetings if you need to. The body is still going to be quite happy with that frequency of low intensity training is really still going to be beneficial. So whatever you can do,
that's all you can do.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the biggest mistakes athletes make when trying to periodize their training on their own?
I would say probably if they go for a block, like I know people want to improve their FTP and they go for a block of FTP training, they forget everything else. So if you focus on one and not the others, you're getting better FTP, but something else might suffer. So you kind of have to be really careful, like not to exclude absolutely everything else and focus on just one thing.
Yeah. And I would just add also probably too eager to get into the build weeks.
Yeah.
And getting those on too early almost. So really it's where you need to appreciate your own context. Really think about how much adaptation energy you've put into the base phase. Am I ready for these? Would it be better to take one more base week, or do I really need to get into that right away? So consider that, because I don't want to burn out later, and just recognize that you need the adaptation energy. That's fat burning, basement, and that's just going to go so far towards, you know, eliciting your performance when it matters, you know, 2-3 months from now.
Racing all year round. Because then you're always on the build phase, and then you start like feeling like
100%
so fatigued after a few months, and then you still have your A race, right?
Yeah, totally. So it's like, yeah, it's too much intensity with all of these issues. The key problem is just too much intensity, which is stress, right? At the end of the day, for all of us, we're overstressed in our environment. We're all go, go, go. And it's important to use your zone 2 MAF kind of work to control the stress. When you do that as best you can, you're laying down the ability to adapt to the training when it matters. And if you don't, you're just not optimizing for yourself. So if the more you can think about and know that and recognize that, the more better off you're going to be in laying down the performance of your lifetime.
Does age factor into this at all?
Unfortunately, yeah, probably does. I think the younger you are, the more you can get away with, which is cool. You know, and I certainly know I did that as a youngin. I still performed okay, pretty well, I guess, on way too high intensity training, just smashing myself all the time, and you can adapt to it so much better. And so as you age, you eventually get to this, whenever it is, a period of time in your life where you're not processing your stress and probably carbohydrates as well as you used to in the days, and you're just not quite adapting to the same level. And yeah, and where that occurs is going to be individual across every person. But I think age does sort of matter a little bit. And we can, your ability to handle stress probably slowly reduces as you age.
Need more recovery.
Need more recovery. But everyone's going to be, there's no set age to say, because you're 45, it's this. You know, there's a lot of 45, 50, 60, 70, 80 year olds that are so resilient, right? Like, so it just depends on the person. But in general, that individual's lifetime, there's probably going to be somewhat of a change. So it's, unfortunately, it's back to the old depends answer.
Anything else you two want to add to the periodization discussion?
The only I would add, I love throwing a little bit of a nutrition element into the periodization, because we sometimes talk about, you know, periodizing your nutrition as well. And there is an element of that that goes on too, that is successful for some athletes that you, the listener, may want to be aware of. And that's kind of the, you know, the fuel for the work required philosophy. And ultimately it is that, you know, you might want to periodize your nutrition around the types of training that you're doing. For example, in a low intensity aerobic base session, probably not a humongous need for a bunch of carbohydrates to throw at that session, because it's just your the purpose of that session is to lay that fat burning aerobic foundation. So to do that and to keep insulin low, you actually want to probably limit the carbohydrates in that session. And that's very well established across the literature. You know, I think Trent Stellingworth actually from Canada was one of the first to lay down a really good paper in IJSPP around how he did that with his marathon runners. And that's a really, you keep that in mind too, right? So it's quite simple, right? You can go out for your morning, your very first morning session fasted, and then you'd have breakfast thereafter. But that's like, you know, you're basically just prolonging the fast, because, you know, you're just doing an aerobic session, could be, you know, whatever that might be for you. And then in the high intensity session, conversely, you might want to throw that more in a fed condition, whatever that, you know, is for you, whether that's carbohydrates or just having energy on board, depending on the type of background diet that you typically have. But regardless, you're making sure that energy is definitely available in that one, probably be some carbohydrates, and then so your brain's kind of very, very active. And that works for some people to get a little bit more bang for buck out of their key sessions. So I'll just mention that one.
I would say pay attention to recovery weeks, because that's part of periodization too. Like, if you're nursing niggles and you're flat or you're feeling irritated and you're not sleeping, instead of pushing for one more week, let's get through this week, just take a few days off. Like, throw in a recovery period if you're feeling tanked, or if you have injuries that are coming on.
That's nice.
Especially as you age.
Yeah, well, and you've actually made me think of one more example, MJ. And I think to my mate Dan Plews, I've heard him talk about this on other podcasts, and speaking with him, I know he does this too in some of his elite triathletes that he coaches, and some of the best in the world, like Chelsea Sodero in the past and others. He is periodized based on heart rate variability. So, for example, as long as heart rate variability, and you've got this yourself as an Athletica user, you can see this in your recovery profile, but as long as that heart rate variability 7-day average is over your 60-day baseline, as long as that's still tracking upwards, he's giving them build weeks, basically. So that they're continuing to build, because he knows they're adapting, right? And that's this big pump of the parasympathetic branch in the system is saying that there's adaptation energy behind that whole thing. But as soon as that comes down, it's time to insert your own recovery week. And you have that luxury in Athletica as well, because you can go again into your overview tab and you can just instantly insert in your own recovery week. So we don't have that, you know, we had Andrea on the podcast last and he was saying we're not quite there yet, because making these erratic Athletica, but you, the driver of Athletica, have that ability to go in there and make that change. So you can also periodize based on your heart rate and heart rate variability response, which I think is kind of cool.
Thank you for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Werlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass Podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science Podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.